In the Great Hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes, created from the cosmic legends of the universe. Superman. Wonder Woman. Batman. Aquaman. And those three junior super friends, Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog. Their mission, to fight injustice, to right that which is wrong, and to serve all mankind.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of For All Mankind, a Super Friends podcast. For All Mankind is a read-through show covering DC Comics' classic Super Friends series, which ran for 47 issues from 1976 to 1981. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly. And joining me this episode in the Hall of Justice are my super friends, Siskoid and Boss. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you both for being here.
Obviously, it's our pleasure, and we have to get in under the wire,
yes,
as it were, right? Before the show ends.
Absolutely. It dawned on me that when I started out on the show, I had certain guests, you know, already pegged in, like, you know, okay, the Supergirl issue, that's Ange. The Plastic Man issue, that's Max. But I was like, I want to make sure every member of the network is represented. And so as we were going through it, it sort of dawned on me just a couple of months ago. I'm like, oh, geez, we're down into like the last 8 months of the book. So we haven't had Cisco and Bass on yet. So, yeah, we're here to talk about Super Friends number 42. It was on sale December 23rd, 1980. But guys, I have to ask you, do you have any, either one of you have any history with this series? Did Super Friends, the comic, ever make it into Canada?
I'm sure it came into Canada. There's no reason why it wouldn't, but,
at the border.
We got all the, everything DC put out, Marvel put out, we got. That's not a,
but I don't think,
I've never seen Super Friends in the wild.
Exactly. I mean, we had, back then, four channels, three of them were French, two of them were English, and we were, well, I was kind of far from the U.S. border, so I had none of the channels coming from the U.S. over the air, right? Because we didn't have
cable back then. Are you saying that you never watched Super Friends, the show?
Well, I got Super Friends, the show, maybe once or twice, but it's not part of my, it's not part of the thing. I maybe watched one or two, but it wasn't a regular thing.
Okay. I had more American channels than that. I lived on the border, I understand. But Super Friends, Challenge of the Super Friends, especially, was a big part of my childhood. But the comic book, you know what, Rob? It probably was there. It's just I started buying American comics kind of at the end of this, like in, I would say 81, 82. That's when I started collecting. Okay. So I missed Super Friends, and anything that was like in the 70s, maybe I'd find something in a flea market, you know, something like that. But there was a big blind spot for me on, you know, issues like this. It's the same reason I haven't been on Batman Family Reunion. That was all finished by the time I started collecting comics.
Gotcha. Okay. So you said, Boss, you never barely even really saw the show.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I knew of them, but I knew of the show. I never knew that there was a comic book. Well, not until I, you know, started listening to For All Mankind, but you know,
Bus is a bit younger than we are.
Just a little bit, four or five years.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm a bit of Teen Titans times. You know, I started with the Teen Titans really, and some Superman and Batman, and but the Super Friends never really. So this is a discovery for me. I can't wait to get into this.
Oh, outstanding. So Siskoid, have you ever read any issues of Super Friends pre this issue?
Yes. Okay. Here and there, following the show, that kind of stuff. But I'm not, you know, especially because I had an interest in the Global Guardians or the characters that became the Global Guardians. I did peek in and out of this series to check out how these characters used to be. You know, especially like today, we're going to talk about one character that actually became a fairly big deal in the proper DC universe, but she's completely different, you know.
Yeah, I didn't assign this to you based on that, so this was just serendipity that it worked out. We have a Global Guardian guest appearing in this issue. So as I mentioned, it's Super Friends number 42. It was on sale December 23rd, 1980, just before Christmas Eve. The story is called How Green Was My Gotham? Before we get to the plot synopsis, I'm going to ask you guys about this cover by Kurt Schaffenberger. As we mentioned last month, Ramona Freyden is officially off the book permanently, both on the insides and on the cover, despite my mistaken thinking Ramona kept drawing the covers. She did not. Kurt Schaffenberger will do the covers for the remaining issues of the series, and we will have Tangal doing the pencils on the inside. But before we get to the plot, guys, what do you think of this incredibly busy cover?
Well, it's very busy, but of course, everybody's on there. I mean, we've got Batman in the forefront. We got Superman and Wonder Woman, you know, Aquaman is there also, and everybody's there. There's only one person not entangled, and it's this green person I had no idea existed. Well, actually, you know, spoiler alert, I did recognize her later on, but, this guy with the weird suit. Yellow and green, and I have no idea who this is. So it's kind of busy, but still intriguing.
They've got the guest stars, including the villains, in the background. but it's kind of a good idea because one of the weird things about this issue is that it's doing green on green. So you've got a green villain and green and yellow villain, green and yellow-ish. I mean, her legs here look very yellow, but, you know, a green hero who has a big chunk of the action. Like, the Super Friends are sort of helping her. They're just slumming it. It's like her book. And I don't know. It's a lot of green. It's more green than even the Green Lanterns know that, like, their villains have to be some other color. But in this case, it's like green villain, green hero. It's a lot of green. And maybe... especially given that this is a Christmas issue somehow. It does say extra special Wonder Twins Christmas story, but then it turns out the Super Friends story also taking place around Christmas and has a partially a Christmas theme. So it's an entirely Christmas issue. You know, it's maybe a little red versus green type might have worked. So it's a good idea to put the Super Friends themselves all around the cover so that it creates color.
Absolutely. I'm always happy when Aquaman, of course, makes the cover, because often he was cut just out of space considerations. And this is already a crowded cover. You've got the copy at the top. As you mentioned, you've got the banner down at the bottom. So it wouldn't have surprised me if Robin and Aquaman had been dropped in favor of the guest star getting a little more cover real estate. But I'm happy he's there. So, you know, good on you, Kurt Schaffenberger. I'm happy you fit all five of our heroes in there. And yeah, we've got this kind of Mortish villain. We'll find out more about him in a moment, but my plant army has defeated you, Super Friends, but not Green Fury. Let's see how your army does under fire. Okay. All right. We're going to find out what is going on in this story. So as I mentioned, it's called How Green Was My Gotham? Obviously, E. Nelson Bridwell, familiar with the John Ford movie of 1941. It was written by E. Nelson Bridwell, drawn by Romeo Tangal and Vince Coletta. We open at Wayne Enterprises, where Bruce Wayne is having a meet and greet for the managers of his company's foreign branches, including one Beatriz DaCosta. Later that night, a strangely costumed man wanders a vacant lot. He buries a small seed in the ground, which immediately turns into a giant beanstalk. He begins to climb and is then spotted by Beatriz, who transforms into the Green Fury. Green Fury watches the man climb out onto a branch and uses it to break into a nearby apartment building. She then attempts to stop him, and he responds with a smoke bomb. Batman arrives as well, but both our heroes let him escape when he throws a flare seed, temporarily blinding them. We then flash back to the origin of the villain we just met, named Green Thumb. He was an ordinary man who, while scuba diving, discovered a downed alien spaceship. Inside is a treasure of seeds from various planets, which he now uses to commit crimes. Back at the Hall of Justice, Batman and Green Fury, who was introduced to the Wonder Twins, explain to the Super Friends what happened. They hear a loud drilling sound and discover that the Green Thumb has come to them. He's drilling into the Super Friends trophy room. Green Thumb takes control of some Kryptonian soil and attacks the Super Friends with strangle vines, which grab our heroes, except the Wonder Twins. They transform and help defeat the Vines, while Green Fury uses her powers to alter what Green Thumb is seeing, so he thinks he's killed the Super Friends. That gives them the time to grab him. The next day, Bruce Wayne and Beatrice have lunch, and Wayne wonders about the coincidence that Green Fury has showed up in the United States the same day as Beatrice. All right, that's how green was my Gotham. Let's talk about the splash page for a moment. Again, if you thought the cover was busy, oh boy, the splash page. There is a lot going on here.
Yeah, but I think it's actually a better construction, though, in many ways, because you get all the heroes are in the background. Oh, Gleek is there, even though he's not in the story.
Yeah.
So you get all the heroes in the background coming at, I want to call him Plant Master, Green Thumb.
Green Thumb.
The Green Thumb.
Plant Master would be too cool of a name. I mean, I think it'd be Green Thumb.
Plant Master, I think that's something. It's already someone.
Yeah, but, the Floronic Man, aka Plant.
Right.
I don't know why he isn't just that character as opposed to this new guy.
Well, he's too scary for kids,
I guess. So,
but
well,
this guy,
Alan Moore.
Yeah, this guy has a fun gimmick. I mean, the Green Thumb, and he's actually got a green thumb. His thumb has been greened, turned green by the alien technology, and. I mean, Green Fury, Green Flame. She's Green Fury at this point. Green Fury is actually in a pretty badass pose, and you get an idea of. I mean, he's surrounded by these plants that are also critters.
Mm-hmm.
So I like this. It is a lying cover, however, it does lie to us because it says two new costume characters have hit town, and of course. That made me believe at first that, wait, is this Green Fury's first appearance? But of course it isn't.
No.
So, yeah. She appeared in number 25 of this series. So, for a second there, I was mystified.
Yeah. I had the same reflex. I was like, Beatrice, she's supposed to be just fire. And then I went to check if this was her first appearance. And, no. So I had to go read, number 25 also.
I'm glad you pointed out that Gleek is there. I hadn't really thought about that. He's not in the story, but I love that if you look in closely, he's got his arm outstretched, pointing towards the villain. Like he's charging. He's telling Xan where to go.
Well, Xan is one of the most useless characters. So,
yeah, he needs all the help he can get.
he needs his monkey buddy.
Fair enough. But yeah, you're right. It is. It's crowded, but it does tell you what you're about to see. And that, yeah, these are obviously Green Thumb. Not only is he controlling plants, but obviously these are not normal plants. We see that the tree that's behind him has got all these metallic looking spikes sticking out of it. And there's one creature down at the bottom that has like claws. So he's like a little skittery critter from like John Carpenter's The Thing or something. So yeah, it's a nice image overall. I mean, we'll talk about the story, but, you know, Vince Coletta, we don't need to go in about Vince Coletta, and you guys are coming onto the book just as Romeo Tangal is now officially taking over. What do you think about Romeo Tangal just as a penciler? How familiar are you with his work outside of, you know, this particular issue?
I had problems with Romeo Tangal in the past. I think this issue looks pretty slick. You know, actually, his art is fairly slick, but sometimes I felt like it was too slick or it made things too round, or I'm not sure how to explain, but when he took over on Captain Atom, I remember like, from Pat Broderick was very scratchy. And that was sort of the look that I liked for that book, for that character. And then Romeo Tangal takes over and it's like everybody's got like these really, I don't know. It's something about the eyes often where there's like the iris is just like too defined or I don't know. But in this case, those things don't show up. I mean, it's earlier art from him. Vince Coletta has simplified it, probably.
Yeah, as he does. Right?
As he does. But I think for Super Friends, which is supposed to emulate the cartoon show, which had a very simplified look, I think that makes sense. You know, it's not, of course, I'd rather see Ramona Freyden on this, obviously, mm-hmm. Because she has this cartooning style that does lend itself to looking like the stylization of animated series, mm-hmm. but she's a better draftsman. But so I'm not a big fan of Romeo Tangal. I think both he and, for that matter, Schaffenberger here, or Bob Smith, who inked the cover, or Vince Coletta, they are workhorses, you know,
serviceable.
I mean, it's superhero art of the Bronze Age. It's fine without it being particularly memorable.
Yeah. I don't want to say simple, but it's certainly not too elaborate. So yeah, I think it fits for Super Friends, but I did enjoy number 25 a lot more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this still has, I think, like the sequences of, like, a plant master, the Green Thumb's origin story has some, you know, some lighting effects and a good, there's good posing, good postures, good expressions. I think B, when she is in her civilian identity, especially, is gorgeous. So it's not terrible at all. There's a lot of good stuff in there.
Absolutely. Bruce Wayne agrees with you, says Goy, that Beatrice is gorgeous, because after the opening scene where he meets her and he's having a meeting of all of his sort of branch managers, she walks away. First of all, when he sees her for the first time, and he speaks Spanish, which is
Portuguese,
yeah. Excuse me. He speaks Portuguese, which is, you know, not surprising for Bruce Wayne / Batman. It's still impressive. But I love that her hair is blowing. I don't know where that breeze is coming from, because they're inside, but her hair is like there's like a movie crew behind her, you know, with the key lighting and I'm like, okay, all right. And then as she walks away, he goes, "She's extraordinarily lovely, and I have a feeling she'll turn out to be a top executive."
Yeah,
that's super problematic there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's a little cringe.
It is Mad Men cringe. She's also cosplaying Catherine Colbert. You know, we're not used to seeing her with black hair. Is the thing. You know, looking through this, I was going, okay, let's see what the differences are between Fire. This became like a Justice League character, Green Fury, and then Fire. You know, I think she was Green Fury or Green Flame, perhaps. You know, she changed her names a couple times until she settled on Fire. So we're used to Fire, but we're not necessarily used to all the tricks that I knew she could do, because the Who's Who entry mentions them in the Global Guardians entry. So I kind of knew, but that she sort of transforms a little bit Wonder Woman-like, you know, there's a spin of flame. I don't know where the flame comes from when she, you know, but there are special effects that she can do that the modern
it's coming
day
out
fire.
Of her mouth, right? Is it
yeah.
coming out of
well,
her mouth?
Well, that's the thing. She,
mouth and
she
nose.
Breathes, she, it's the nose thing. She breathes fire. That I knew that, you know, there's even the update, Who's Who update says so. And that's sort of how she's portrayed. So I guess her lungs get filled up because the fire comes from somewhere else when she transforms, and fill her lungs, and then she can just expel it. And of course, your nose is connected to your lungs.
So she
snorts fire, out of her nose, which is completely ridiculous. And especially since it's green, you know, it's a snot joke.
It's a snot joke.
Yeah, I wonder if that was done on purpose. It's, you know, this is supposed to be pitched for younger, a little gross out humor, as we know kids really love. Now it's like all children's media is full of gross out humor. But back in the day, it's a weird thing. But
yeah, she has flame boogers. That's what the power is.
Flame flame. And but to me, like, I knew all of this and I was expecting the visuals. What most surprised me was that she transforms, that she's not a green haired beauty just walking around. She has a secret identity, you know, she has black hair here. She's, you know, she's apparently a Latin woman from Brazil, and you can't tell it's the same character. So that was interesting. It's something that they took away from her when they rebooted, they put her in the real DC universe.
I didn't know that she had the power, or maybe she has it in the previous issues and I just don't remember, that the whole change, like, mind trickery thing, because she changes on the street and she's like, this dazzling sparks will make sure these people think I'm walking away. We see these four people just kind of staring off. I don't remember that being she uses it at the end of the story, but I don't remember that being part of her power set, that she can sort of like cloud men's minds or something.
Yeah, it's mentioned in the Who's Who entry, but of course that's way later.
Like, okay, all right. So she turns into Green Fury, turn Green Flame, Flame Fury. What, I should change her name like four different times. She jumps up and she follows Green Thumb into this apartment building. And of course, he said, this guy's at the apartment of Jeffrey Geldon. What is it? Let me look it up closely. Let me see what it says. There's some reason why.
Jeffrey Seldon.
Seldon.
The great actor.
Yeah, the great actor. I don't know what that's supposed to be. Like, okay. I guess it's just to make some excuse as to why he has all this memorabilia that the Green Flum is going to steal. I don't know why. I mean, what difference does it make? So he shows up and then Green Flame stops him. He throws that bomb. Batman is standing there. I notice here already by this point, Batman is the Batman. I didn't remember when that got changed over from he's just with Batman to the Batman, but here he's the Batman. And then Green Thumb manages to get away from them both with a flare seed or a glare seed, I guess what it is. I don't know what a glare seed is. I guess that's got to be one of the alien things. But man, Batman really kind of drops the ball. He can't, like, this guy just goes flump and he's gone. Well, all right, that's it for me. Like, geez, Batman. I don't know. He's not,
not his best showing. No, yeah. It really is. But I do like the stuff with the Green Thumb, where he, you know, at first he puts the seed down, touches it with his magic thumb, which is not colored green here, but should have been. And then the tree jumps, you know, comes out of that vacant lot, and he has to jump away. This is how much control he has over these powers. and he keeps pulling that tree. Okay, this is the Christmas bit, right? And we do see it's Merry Christmas on the building there. There's a Santa. There's no question this is Christmas time. But this Christmas tree, as he calls it, creates fruit that it looks like ornaments, vaguely. Mm-hmm. And each of these fruits has a power that he can use. So there's like, he says fruits, but they look like anything but. I mean, there's like this ugly looking rutabaga kind of thing that he can use. That is, I guess there's a laser beam coming out of it. That's how he gets through the window. And then looks like a big peanut, but that's going to be his bag to put the treasures in, et cetera, right? It's all seeds. And when he leaves, he says, in some places, Christmas is celebrated with fireworks. So a rocket would be appropriate. And then he has this like giant fruit, this kind of pod seed that acts as a rocket, and he rides it out of there. So
it's such beautiful exposition just to explain why all this weird stuff is happening. I just love it.
I got to respect his theme upon theme, because he's already a themed villain, plants, right? Oh, I love that in that panel, one of the ornaments looks like an actual grenade.
Yeah.
So
in some places we celebrate Christmas with grenades.
Grenades, of course. Fireworks, grenades, sparklers, whatever it is.
In America, a grenade is acceptable celebration for anything.
Maybe more 4th of July, but let's say Christmas, sure. So, I mean, he's already running a plant theme. And he's decided, it's Christmas. I got to also run a Christmas theme. So he makes choices based on the holiday spirit. I mean, this guy, you know, he's got it going on.
And I mean, I know this is a 70s, 1981. 1981 comic.
Came out in 80.
Yep. But everything could have been just ordinary fruits. And you know, there's a fruit that's actually called a pomegranate in French. It's a grenade. That's a grenade.
It's a grenade. Yeah.
You know, everything could have been just ordinary, you know, fruit. Just a banana could have been the thing.
Because that's the word where the that's where the word grenade comes from. It comes from the pomegranate. Yeah. So,
so you know, it could have been all like real fruit, but alien fruit are much more fun, I guess.
It's part of his origin, you know.
Yeah.
Right. We're going to learn that in a second. I love that when he escapes, Green Flame goes, "Oh, cow, the dog. He escaped while we were blind." Like that. She's kind of got that exhortation. It's not, you know, it's not Great Guardians. It's not Great Rayo, but it'll do in the moment. I like that the tree withers after he's done with it. That's kind of a nice, like, not leave any evidence kind of behind sort of thing. I think that's kind of cool.
That's part of the Christmas theme. You know, you got to put that tree on the side of the road because,
oh yeah, the sad Christmas trees turning brown. Yeah. Then we get our secret origin of the Green Thumb, which is just sort of classic Super Friends in that some crazy thing happens. It doesn't need to be explained. There's just random alien ships at the bottom of any body of water on Earth. And that's it. We don't need to worry about it. He's got the thumb. He's got the space seeds. And of course, I'm going to use this to commit crimes and bang, we're done. And, you know, it's beautifully drawn. I mean, we joke, Vince Coletta is constantly erasing things, but like there's some wonderful line work, especially on the third page of the origin of the waves and stuff like that, that seaweed and all this stuff. It's really wonderfully rendered by Tangel and, to be fair, Coletta. He didn't erase any of this. It looks really terrific. So it's just one of these crazy origins. Oh, there's a robot who's wearing a mask. I'll take the mask. All right, that's the end of that. Let's go back to the crime.
Yeah, the mask has X-ray vision, so I can see, oh, treasures inside the ship. I'll part the algae and see it. At which point, I started asking myself, why go into thievery? You know, if you're already a scuba diver who looks for treasure down there, and these vision powers and plant powers allow you to find treasure, why are you stealing from this guy's apartment at all? You know. Because Super Friends, that's what it is.
He's got a whole thing of space seeds. No Star Trek joke intended there. And yeah, you could sell those or just become an incredible gardener. You know, I mean, we can see he's sitting in his lair and he's got this kind of the cool swivel chair and he's got hanging plants. I mean,
solve world hunger. Yeah,
there's a lot of money in seeds here.
Failure in imagination is the problem. A lot of these villains, it's like you say, well, if you can create that technology, he built that gun, he built that crazy tech, you know, technology and, you know, Android hoods and whatever else you're creating. Why are these people so strapped for cash? Why? But like, because probably it's always to finance their experiments, but couldn't you sell a patent or two or something, you know, instead of robbing banks and getting caught by the Flash? Well, comics.
I'm going to make a costume and sit there and, you know, with my little booties on and sit there with all my plants. So yeah, that's it. That's his plan. So we rejoin the Super Friends. We see the Wonder Twins are training with Superman. I love that Superman is floating in the air and he's laying there like he's asleep, like he's like got his arms behind his head and his cape. That's just a nice little detail. Instead of him floating the way we would typically see him here, he's actually kind of like he's relaxing, like he's in a hammock or something, as Zan turns into a giant wave and Jaina turns into a Tanthu Flez, which is a Kryptonian word meaning winged one. So they all balance each other. And she actually brings Superman down through the heft of her size, brings him down to the ground. And just as Batman and Green Flame are walking in, and there's, you know, nice little bit of continuity in that they're being introduced to Green Flame, because, of course, she's not a Green Fury. She's not met them before, because the last time she was in the book, it was Marvin and Wendy. I thought that's nice. And then he says hi to Superman again. Watching this, it makes me sad that the lane only went one way, in that cartoon occasionally would drift into the comic book in some ways, but the comic book never drifted into the cartoon. She would have been a fun character to show up in the Super Friends cartoon. I think it would have been kind of neat.
Yeah, where was the cartoon at this point? Well, I guess issue 25, I mean, it was early enough that she could have shown up, you know, and they had all these international characters.
Right, she would have fit that. Yeah, they had that whole thing about it. They've got to be international heroes. This would have fit that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it never happened. But in a way, it's maybe a good thing for her, because that means she is a DC creation that, you know, that, I mean, if she premiered on the cartoon show, then she would have been out of reach of any writers later on, right? Yeah.
Right. But I mean, they did have Plastic Man and Green Arrow and other characters. I mean, they could have, you know, it would have been neat. You know, so it's cool. So yeah, I like that whole thing. They meet and explain. Aquaman and Robin show up and they explain, okay, this is what's going on. And then we're back to Green Thumb, who for some reason is deciding to do a frontal attack on the Super Friends by trailing into their their throne room. And I kind of like that the we see the wall to the side of the Hall of Justice, and it just looks like a brick wall. It doesn't look like the Hall of Justice. No. It's just a building. We see there's a bags of plants. It's just like, okay, this, if you wouldn't know it, it looks like he's just drilling into an apartment building.
It's an annex. It's probably like behind the Hall of Justice. It's just like, oh, they needed a treasure room. You know, they need a trophy room. So they just built an annex. My house back in Edmonton when I grew up, well, when I was a teenager, had that annex. That's where I slept, you know, but it wasn't like, it had like a different siding. You know, but you don't see it from the street. I bet that's what it is.
Yeah, it just feels like it.
Please send me a Nobel Prize.
Yeah, it's attached to, you know, to the training room, and that's where, you know, the Wonder Twins sleep or something. And yeah, there's the treasure room.
But I'm going to call shenanigans on it's the coloring. There's been a lot of coloring mistakes in this particular issue, whether it's the costume is yellow on the cover, but it's for Green Thumb, but he's completely in green or different shades of green in the interior. So that was already a mistake there. As soon as the Super Friends realize that he's invaded their space and they walk in, Green Flame spits out Orange Flame. I say Green Flame, but Green Fury. But, you know, her fire is supposed to be green. So there's a lot of these little mistakes. So I'm going to say that wall, even though you might question the bricks, that wall should have been white. Yeah. It should have been the same color as the Hall of Justice.
Yeah, it should have some indication that it's the Hall of Justice. Because if you look at it, you're like, oh, he's just wait a minute, what? Superman's like, what's that sound I hear? Like, okay, that's the all right, that's fine. So
I didn't even notice because I was fixated on the drill plant. I mean, that thing is wondrous.
And that a little rude.
That is an incredibly hard plant that can drill through brick.
Yeah.
That's a pretty, I mean, it's alien, sure, but still.
Yeah, but later on, he throws seeds in the air and they've got wings and they're shooting pellets, you know.
The airborne cannon plants.
There's everything in there. My big, the thing that I'm most surprised, and here also we get Green Fury can, and that this was in issue 25 as well, but her flame that she spits can also be absolute zero ultra cold. Well, okay. So that's how she gets rid of those flying guns. But
at this moment, I'm thinking, because I don't really know fires, all the powers she has and everything. So at this moment, I'm thinking, is she kind of related to Green Lantern, you know, Alan Scott Green Lantern that has this green flame stuff? And, you know, maybe she can only control so much of it. Or at this point, I'm all confused about these powers. I mean, is that in the Who's Who entry also? I mean,
oh no, they don't say anything, but here we do see that it's Mystic Flame that enters her and gives her, like, turns her into Green Fury. So, I mean, it's not I like your theory. It's not a big stretch to think that it's the same kind of energy that's out there that Alan Scott uses. And so she can do different effects, but instead of a ring, it's her lungs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. I never made any connection between them. I do love the panel with the airborne cannon plants in the world of Galoo. I all props to Ben Oda for taking the effort to do 5 sound effects in that panel, all of which are different.
Bam, pow, bam, blam, and Pam. Yeah.
Pam. One of the sound effects is Pam.
That's
Pam. Okay. All right.
I can hear Michael Scott just saying, Pam, 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 Pam.
And then below that, the Super Friends and Green Fury are charging. And it is one of the most bizarrely composed images I have seen. And we'll have this on the gallery page on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. We've got Superman. We've got Wonder Woman. We've got Green Fury yelling, they cannot withstand my hot breath. Aquaman just sort of standing there in the background. The Wonder Twins, Robin, but then the not even the whole head of Batman. One eye and the cowl of Batman just poking in from the bottom of the frame.
I didn't even notice him.
Why is he there?
Well, I mean, his eyes should be rolling for the little play on words there, Robin. Gave us
thumb fun.
Yeah,
huh?
And this is Robin's big contribution to this story, which is still one contribution more than Aquaman, unfortunately. But some fun. A Wonder Twins. Oh God, it's that's just a terrible, terrible pun. Is this how Robin is usually used?
Yeah,
this is kind of the jokester, right? So
yeah. I don't know. I look at that pun. Like, what did Romeo Tango? I don't know. I just don't get why you would draw Batman like that.
You know what? Maybe it's, oh shoot, I forgot Batman.
Maybe.
Just like, because Batman can't be in the background. He can't have let the Wonder Twins go first, or Robin.
You know. Or Aquaman, probably, even for that matter. But
yeah, so. Yeah,
it's very strange.
He's the one, he's closest to Green Thumb. He's cleared there's a bar there. there's a little counter there for. He's cleared that, and he's going to be the first one to punch Green Thumb in the face, or throw him around, because I'm sure there's no punches in this. And then Green Fury, there's the gun, so Green Fury takes care of that, and they never get a chance to be violent to Green Thumb. And this is the thing that I really question, is the soil from Krypton labeled and everything. So that was part of the trophy room.
Yes.
And it just so happens he also has Kryptonian seeds.
Well, of course.
Yeah. So Superman should be pretty interested in that. You know, it's like a relic of his own cult, you know, his dead world, but that has survived somehow. But he's got soil from Krypton. Would those seeds not grow in normal soil? Well, the guy's been throwing seeds around, and they've always grown no matter what. But with the richness, like the soil from Krypton probably has bacteria from Krypton, which helps the Kryptonian, what is it? Strangle vines, and Krypton was a hell world.
Well, yeah, Krypton is the. I mean, it's
death. Death is at every corner in Krypton.
Yeah, it's the Australia of the universe.
Oh yeah, okay.
Everything and anything will kill you.
So strangle vines come out super big because that's the power. You know, he thumbs it. But and we just saw, I mean, that's the function of the little training exercise earlier. Jaina turns into a Kryptonian animal, and she's able to defeat Superman because all the animals would be solar powered when they were in our world. Mm-hmm. So she has the powers, the creature is super strong, and she's able to take Superman down. So that makes her super, like, really overpowered when you think about it. She should always turn into Kryptonian animals, which is what she does. And actually in this issue, she's always turning into Kryptonian animals. But so she'll be able to defeat the strangle vines, which are able to defeat Superman, and apparently not squeeze Batman and Robin to pulp. But, you know, this is a kid's comic. It's not going to happen. But it's all Kryptonian all the time. Everything is Kryptonian in this. Kryptonian frost. I mean, Zan turns into Kryptonian frost. And he said, oh, as I thought, Kryptonian frost. It's different from Earth frost. It can kill the vines because, of course, even the atmosphere had powers. And and that also means that he can turn into things that he doesn't even know the properties of, and he still will have the properties of that thing.
Oh, yeah. Zan was taking notes.
Zan went from the most useless super friend. Yeah, can turn into a, you know, please find a bucket, Gleek, because I got to turn into a small amount of water. I mean, in the comic as on the show, the sort of his, you know, his shapeshifting was pretty low powered compared to Jaina's, is the thing. And but here, so okay, no. Normally I turn into a dew, but here I will turn into Kryptonian dew and somehow defeat the plant, you know, like freeze up the plant. So he was listening to that lesson. Oh, Kryptonian stuff, yes, let's do that.
Yeah, I'm not sure why Superman is so nostalgic for his home world, to be honest with you.
No,
seems it's a pretty
horrendous
pretty horrendous place. I do enjoy the panel after they turn what Jaina turned into the Kryptonian frost and the Thought Beast from Krypton, which has this ridiculous kind of like radar dish sort of thing sticking out the back of its head. I love that the strangle vines, it looks like Batman is dead. There's the everybody's kind of flailing except Batman. He's kind of slumped over, which makes it look like he's out for the count. And then of course That's what Green Thumb is seeing. He's thinking that he's defeated the Super Friends, and he's like, you know, and he's taking a victory lap. He's like, they've all been strangled. I've triumphed over the Super Friends. And then he sort of like blinks and bang, they're all surrounding him. I like that Superman is pointing at him, which I like that.
It looks like Batman is just rabbit punching him behind the back.
He does look like he's about to be punched in the back of the neck by Batman.
I mean, this is a weird ending because at first I thought, like, it ties into Green Fury being able to dazzle you with green sparks, you know. But here it goes a little further, and she refuses to explain it. I know that's not what the Thought Beasts do. You know, the Thought Beasts, they're telepathic, and they project what you're thinking onto that screen that they have, that dish. You would see images of what other people are thinking. That's their power. And she doesn't use it here. It's just basically used as a herbivore that will be able to eat the vines. But when this happened, I thought, oh, okay, yeah, the Thought Beast is projecting, or Jaina as a Thought Beast is projecting what this guy is seeing. And maybe, maybe you change continuity a little bit to make it so, but no, it's Green Fury. So, as long as you're using a Thought Beast, E. Nelson Bridwell, why not use a telepathic trick from that creature? But then it means that Jaina saves the day instead of the Green Fury, and Green Fury has to be the star of this thing.
After they've apprehended Green Thumb, Robin's like, hey, I've come up with a name for this case in our files. How green was my Gotham? Which is, you know, it's one of those things that you're like, E. Nelson Bridwell, you know, he's referencing a 40-year-old movie by this point, which no kid would know at that point. You know,
I don't know. I mean, wasn't there a TV show as well?
Was there? Oh, I'm not. If there was, I'm not familiar with that. I mean, it was a phrase in the culture.
It would still have been like decades before, you know.
But yeah, I mean, again, even at this point, the movie was still 4 years later. And I will point out, just sort of related to one of my other shows here in the network, How Green Was My Valley, famous for defeating Citizen Kane for Best Picture in 1941.
Yep.
So, but I don't hold it against John Ford. They didn't know. Come on. It's a great movie, but it's no Citizen Kane. But anyway, the story wraps up with Beatrice and Bruce Wayne having dinner. And, and we realize that Bruce Wayne is like, okay, well, this is interesting that they're both here at the same time. But he's like, but Fury has flaming green eyes, entirely different from Beatrice's smoldering black eyes.
Oh, he's smitten. He's smitten.
That's the end of our story.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that's like the last shot is her very smug about her secret identity being safe, you know. This was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I mean, for a Christmas story, I was all over that. No, it was fun. It was really fun.
All right. Well, fair enough, guys. So what did you think? What hero deserves the best friend award? What superhero do you think did the most for this case?
I'm going to go with Robin for all the jokes. I'm kidding. I'm very much kidding. Yes. Well, I mean, it can't be Batman because he dropped the ball so many times. So, I'm going to have to say the Wonder Twins.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And the Wonder Twins were often the heroes of those, that era of Super Friends where they were members. It's like, oh, the junior members somehow solve it a little bit, you know? But that's if we're strict about who's a super friend. I think Green Fury is a super friend here. And her trip to America keeps going. She's in the next couple issues, you know? So I'm like, wait, is she now a member? Is that handshake from Superman official? And so I'm going to say it's Green Fury, and she's sort of a honorary member, at least for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Anytime there's a guest star, they can earn the best friend award. They're put in to be the guest star. You know, they're put in to be the, you know, the main draw.
Because it's super friends. It's about friends. So this is actually the Justice League, and they have friends, super friends. And I think Zen and Jaina are super friends. They're not Justice Leaguers. Come on. But they are super friends of the Justice League. And so is Green Fury.
Absolutely. Okay. And what do we think about the villain? He never made it into another comic, as far as I know.
No.
But what do we? I mean, I have to admit, when I started his costume is kind of Mortish and, you know, but never, but the power set is actually pretty impressive when you think about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's, well, he's basically Poison Ivy. So, I mean,
but with alien plants. So,
with
or
plant, alien plants. Yeah.
Or Plant Man from Marvel Comics. Actually closer Plant Man in the way he uses the tricks, but because it's all alien seeds and stuff, it's like it creates some kind of goofy but interesting exotic visuals, and he can sort of do anything, which is something that many Justice League villains have in common, you know, like the silver, when in the Silver Age anyways, a lot of the villains created could do anything because he kind of sort of needed to do anything to counter not only Superman, but Wonder Woman, et cetera, Green Lantern, Flash. You know, you needed a power set or a way to deal with all these heroic threats, you know. So I feel like he fits that, even though he's like a lower level. I thought he did pretty well. And I liked the origin story, had some meat to it. And I liked him more than I thought from the cover.
Yes, exactly.
I really liked him when he had the hat on. In like the first page
and the trench coat.
The trench coat and the hat. Cause nobody saw that green mask with the goggles. I mean, but, he's a bit, I mean, he's goofy in a good way. Of course I understand all the, you know, alien fruit is going to make magic come alive, but I think he's still too, it's too much on the surface. I mean, I would have liked, you know, to hear something like, oh, this is a Kryptonian apple that, you know, explodes when it touches the soil or something, you know, maybe giving us some references or something we can relate to, you know, a Thanagarian banana that stops things from flying or I don't know. But, you know, just fruit that do anything. I was like, mm-hmm. But of course, I'm not 12 anymore. So, you know,
there's that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look, like I said, Mike's Amazing World has no listing of this character beyond this issue. I mean, I don't know, for maybe Alan Moore or Rick Veitch buried him into an issue of Swamp Thing during the Parliament of Trees, you know, that whole era where Swamp Thing was becoming part of the earth. Who knows? But
yeah, I would put him in a, you know, I think like a perfect spot for him would have been, you know, playing cards and that, you know, that issue of Justice League International or America by that point, where one guy gets all the different weapons from all the different supervillains on in a card game, he should be a sort of background character in those supervillain bars, you know, because he's got a distinctive mask. So somebody who remembers this issue might put him in a background somewhere. But as far as I know, it never happened.
No, I don't think so. That's too bad. It's too bad. Okay, let's move on to our backup story, which, as the cover promised, is a Christmas story. It's called Christmas with Everything, or excuse me, A Christmas with Everything, by E. Nelson Bridwell, Romano Tangal, and Vince Coletta. So tied into the main story. The Wonder Twins visit Professor Nichols, who is now in possession of the powerful space seeds of the Green Thumb. He's used one of them to create a massive, gnarled Christmas tree complete with ornaments. The Wonder Twins, dressed as John and Joanna, head out to see what Earth is like during the Christmas season. They wander into a poorer part of Gotham and run across a woman looking for her oldest son, Sammy, who has suddenly taken off. She can't follow because she has to care for her other children. As the Wonder Twins try and find Sammy, we see he is walking across town performing all sorts of good deeds. He returns the money-stuffed wallet of a man who dropped it, saves a kid from getting run over, and rescues a dog that has run away from its owner. We see that Sammy's ultimate destination isn't a Christmas tree store, where he was hoping to buy his family a tree for the holidays, but he doesn't have enough money. The Wonder Twins go back to Professor Nichols and get him to dress as Santa, and all three of them show up at Sammy's home. They bring food, presents, and, thanks to Zan, even snow. Sammy's family doesn't want charity, but the Wonder Twins explain that Sammy earned all this through his good deeds, and all the gifts they are receiving are from the people he helped today. All right, guys, what do you think of this cute little Christmas story starring the Wonder Twins?
Oh, I really liked it, actually. I was like, oh, this is such a heartwarming short story. I mean, it's what? It's like 5 pages, 6 pages, and it's heartwarming. This guy, he's, you know, helping people, and they don't help anybody else. They just say, hey, you're a good guy. Here, have some presents and from everybody you helped. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, same here. I think it's cute. And you sort of know where it's going before you get there, but there are some surprises. Well, to me, I'm not really aware of this, sub story with the Wonder Twins. You know, every so often there's a Wonder Twins backup,
mm-hmm.
but I haven't been following it really, you know. So to me, when that whole setup, which you've been chronicling on the show, the whole setup is very strange to me. That you know that they have these human identities, and their caretaker is Professor Nichols, who is a Golden Age Batman character.
Mm-hmm.
It's very weird, you know. It's like it's a really weird connection to be made, and I am disappointed that the Wonder Twins in their human guises are a couple of blonde people, because
they're from Sweden.
Yeah. Is that what it, yeah.
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 The Flemings. So, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like especially like early 80s like that, where a comic book world starved for representation and diversity, the Wonder Twins are already kind of, they're aliens, obviously, but they're kind of coded as Asian. You know, that they have an Asian look if they drawn as human beings. If they're human beings, except for the ears or whatever, they do read as Asian. And what if they'd had human identities where they tapped into that look instead of having completely different appearances and, okay, just another bunch of blonde people in a comic book, you know? So I was sort of disappointed that that's how that went on, you know? But beside that, you've got your little story about the guy is what my other question is, what are all these rich people doing in this rundown neighborhood? You know, the guy with the wallet. We're obviously in that poor neighborhood that the Wonder Twins walked into. You've got the planks, you know, like the uneven fence all around. So we're in that neighborhood. Super rich guy drops a wallet. He finds the wallet. Fun story about Moncton, where Bess and I live. It was at some point determined to be the most honest city in Canada.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was Maclean's magazine sort of feature where what they did is drop a loaded wallet in a bunch of cities of different sizes, or I guess our sort of size, and waited to see if it was returned, and if it was returned, with how much money still in it. And Moncton was the city where the wallets returned with all the money. So this is a little, this is Gotham. So you can bet this never happens, but, in this case, it's Christmas, you know? So, and the kid is very honest, as we see, he's a hero. He's like a normal, everyday hero. So, but like this guy's super rich. He's in that neighborhood. The lady with the dog, the poodle is shaved, etc. This is a, you know,
that's one ugly poodle. I mean, I thought it was a goat.
It's a little bit of a rabbit as well, but that's why you don't shave dogs. I don't agree with shaving dogs or cats. I mean, that's completely ridiculous, but obviously this is a breeding, you know, this dog is a certain breed, is pure breed. The lady is dressed as a rich person and she's running around that very poor neighborhood, because the next bit, it's obviously the poor neighborhood where the car skids, you know, the skateboarder in the middle of the road. Cause just like the way the walls are broken. And so, that was odd, but you need those rich people to make that story work. What I really like is that, you know, they simulate Santa Claus, where they, you know, let's put some snow cover. Zan is all over the neighborhood as snow. Jaina turns into a Kryptonian reindeer so he can fly, and it's got like the funky face. This is the bit I like. I like when superheroes get into the Christmas game itself.
Yeah. The previous Wonder Twin stories, I did not find terribly charming. This one I liked a lot because it's just cute and it's just a nice Christmas Story, and the kid is trying to do good deeds, and the Wonder Twins help out with there. And I like that it's connected to the main story. That's just a fun little detail that he coordinated those things. So yeah, of all the Wonder Twins stories so far, this one has been my favorite. That's not saying a whole lot. I'd rather have the Seraph back, but he was just in last issue. So you just think of the Wonder Twins as characters. Cause I mean, again, they haven't, outside of the mini series from a couple of years ago, they haven't really been in the comics that much. And so you guys haven't had that much familiarity with them. What do you think of them as characters?
Does Zan have an update on the powers in the mini series? Cause I haven't read it, but, I mean, she has, Jaina has a great power set, but I mean, Zan is, I mean.
And then you had Gleek for the kids. So on the show, on the show, it could be, I don't know. It's like talking down to people. I don't know. I never had a bad reaction to Zan and Jaina. I thought, no, I liked them better than, Marvin and Wendy, who were just not my era. You know, it's like whenever I saw some older, Super Friends material, I was like, meh, you know, that's the sort of, why are they palling around with Scooby-Doo type? And with Zan and Jaina, they, at least they had powers, and they were the junior members, and they solved a lot of problems, caused some problems. They were sort of the comic relief very often, but they had powers that they could then make useful. If you listen to our latest Fire and Water team-up, FW team-up, Bas and I talked about the Metal Men. This is going to be out. It's not out now, Rob, but it's going to be out by the time this comes out. And I said, I like superheroes that can have shape-changing powers.
Mm.
I just like the visuals of that. That it means that there's a lot more variety
to
the action. And that's what they bring, I think. And in this case, we had a story where a guy had alien plants, an alien fruit, to do his work. So that was a funky visual because it was alien. And Jaina does the same thing throughout the issue. She turns into, and she did that on the show, obviously, but she turns into alien animals. So you're never quite sure what you're going to get. And the visuals, it's not a reindeer. It's a flying reindeer with a weird kind of Dr. Seuss face. So, it's an opportunity for interesting visuals, and comics live and breathe on interesting visuals.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and having all these alien counterparts to our, I mean, human or
earthen
animals. that's a cool concept, and I really like that. I just wish that Zan had something else than just turning into water. I mean, it could be just growing pains. I mean, they could have his powers mutate into something else, or, you know, have something. I don't know. But, you know, keeping
much of the time, it was like ice objects.
Yeah.
So that was where he could go. It's like, well, an ice, you know.
An ice prison, and that would surround the villain with spikes of ice.
Okay. An ice vehicle sort of thing. Yeah. And so he could turn into objects. But water, so there was some movement there as well. Anyway,
he could turn into steam and ice, and you know,
it's just not it's not the same as turning into animals. No. You know, which has
exactly,
well, and Gleek had a super long tail, which he could use to.
Oh, I love Gleek.
Usually, he tripped himself up, but
he defeated the time trapper all by himself at the end.
That's crazy, but that's one of the issues I obviously read because of my Legion.
He's a major Legion villain, and he's taken out by Gleek. So there you go. By the law of transitive properties, Gleek can defeat the Legion of Superheroes.
That's true.
So, I know that's my bias popping through here on the show. We're trying to keep things on a nice up keel. So, well, it's a fun issue. It's a fun backup story. Green Thumb probably has a little more going on than maybe you give him credit for generally. And you've got a guest appearance by a character that would go on to be quite valuable to the DC universe. So DC Comics definitely owes E. Nelson Bridwell one for that. Cause, for Pete's sakes, she's been in live action. They even managed to transfer her into live action, for God's sake, which is just unbelievable. So a lot of good uses come from these Global Guardians characters. So, well, guys, thank you so much for doing this. I was like I said, I wanted to make sure all the members of the network got a chance to visit the Hall of Justice. So thank you so much for being here.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
So you just mentioned what you guys have coming up in terms of a show, and you said it'll be posted by the time people hear this. But go over that again, and what else do you guys have working on for the network?
Well, in my case, there's a show every Tuesday, and that varies, obviously. FW team up with Basses every 4 months, and this time Superman. We're doing DC Comics Presents, so it's Superman and the Metal Men versus Kemo and IQ, and that's already out by this point. But otherwise, you know, Hot More Not, and et cetera, et cetera.
And I'm also editing coming up.
That's right. That's
somewhere
right.
In the future. Yeah.
By the time you hear this, it's soon to come out, probably. We did a Who's Editing on the issue with the Titans in it. Like Bess said, you like the Titans. Yeah. So I invited them on there. So that's, we have yet to tape it. We're taping it this week. So I don't know how well it went, but I'm sure it's going to be great. And I'm also on every Thursday until Cheerscast comes back. I'm doing that Hamlet podcast. And that's the cover Ryan's forced absence.
If you like Cheers, you'll love
Hamlet.
Well, outstanding again, guys. Thanks so much for coming on. I really do appreciate it. And thank you all for listening. I want you to stay tuned. I'm going to run some podcast promos and some commercial announcements. And when I come back, I'm going to do some listener feedback.
These are the world's best gardeners, champion gardeners in the Guinness Book of Records. What's the secret of their success?
I grew my world record chrysanthemum with Miracle-Gro.
With Miracle-Gro, I get twice as many tomatoes as I used to get.
Just look at my 279-pound watermelon.
And Miracle-Gro is that good.
Hey, if world champion gardeners depend on Miracle-Gro, shouldn't you?
In 2011, the Irredeemable Shag and Aqua Rob Kelly teamed up to create the Fire and Water podcast. In 2016, they teamed up with Ryan Daly, The Franklins, and Siskoid to form the Fire and Water Podcast Network. A network built on teaming up needs a show about team-ups.
Marvel Team-Up.
Yes.
The Brave and the Bold?
You know it.
Marvel 2-in-1.
It's clobbering time.
DC Comics Presents.
Of course.
Supervillain Team-Up?
Good idea.
Youngblood X-Force?
Technically.
FW Team Up, coming this summer, only from the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
And it's time for our listener feedback, and these are the comments we got on the previous episode of For All Mankind, episode 41, with my guest, Dr. Chris Lewis. Now, just want to start off mentioning here that one of the wonderful things about having Dr. Chris Lewis on your show, aside from the fact that he's just a marvelous guest and has wonderful insights and he's great to talk to, is that he will then later come back to the feedback section of an episode that he's on and respond to virtually every comment. So that means for this episode of For All Mankind, we had like 50 comments. And I love that. I love the feedback. I love seeing tons of comments. We all do on the website. But in the interest of keeping this segment from going on to, you know, as long as the main segment of the show, I'm only going to read some of Chris's comments. So I just want everybody to know it's not because I don't love him. It's just because we've just got to keep the segment a little tight. So starting off, first comment we got from John Dredge, who says, I used to love going to my grand's as well because there was a news agent that had three or four American comics, very rare in the UK. The Defenders and Captain Carrot were always available there. That's off brand. I wish we'd had all the Saturday morning cartoons over here, though we did have Super Friends. And I can confirm that at one point on BBC Two, a Tex Avery cartoon was followed by Newsnight, to which Chris responded, the petition to have a Tex Avery cartoon short precede every depressing current affairs program starts here. Co-signed to that. I don't know if you guys have ever seen American network news, but man, it is just one disaster or one negative story after the next. So yeah, I wouldn't mind maybe a Tom and Jerry or a Mighty Heroes just snuck in, maybe in the middle of the broadcast or something. That might help us all. Anyway, Clint Robinson says, I'm so glad that Rob and Chris brought up the Story of Superman box set. My wife found a set for me at random several years ago, even though they were close to falling apart, but I had never heard of anyone else having them. That's very cool. Yeah. As I said, Clinton, I had no idea they existed either. Ada Boznar says, and so it finally came. Frayden's last issue as the title's main artist. In that regard, I really enjoyed everyone's tributes to her work on Super Friends and in general. Definitely an artist who deserves all the accolades and then some. And connected to that, that For All Merch Kind segment was even more enjoyable than usual, not only because it focused on Frayden, but highlighted something I also never knew existed. As to the issue at hand, I also like that cover. It's basically the Super Friends versus the Village People, which in turn makes me wonder why they never got their own comic book back in the day, kind of like Kiss. And based on the gallery page, I have to say that and the art in the Sarah backup was amazing. Agree to all of that, Ado. One other thing I wanted to mention about Ramona Frayden, which I don't think I had seen when Chris and I recorded the episode, was there's a variant cover, a DC Comics Superman variant cover by Ramona. And it's kind of like a comedy piece where it's Lois Lane in the Daily Planet's office and all this kind of crazy, almost Mad Magazine style shenanigans are going on. It's a beautiful cover, incredibly distinctive, wonderfully drawn. And Ramona is 96 years old, still doing work, still doing great work, just unbelievable. So yeah, no matter how many nice things we said about Ramona Frayden in this episode, she deserves even more. Chris Lewis responds, the Village People is a great analogy and absolutely agree on about that Serif artwork. Definitely a win, which elevates the entire issue. Cellar Dweller says, hello, Rob, Chris L, Chris F, and listeners. Rob, you and Chris L had great chemistry together. The quips were very funny. I truly left it loud a few times. It's a shame that Ramona didn't finish out the book. Her art has always been top notch and will be missed. Loved hearing about how you both felt about the senior heroes and Robin with the twins, as I felt the opposite. I saw the adult heroes giving out tough love to Zan and Jaina while Robin was the jerk with his babysitting comment. Despite this, he did earn the title of best friend for coming up with the possible crimes of Toyman and his eventual capture of him with an assist from the twins. Minor quip on my part, Chris L. mentioned Zan and Jaina's Village of the Damned wigs. That was funny. But there are no wigs. Zan dyes his hair and Jaina uses her powers to turn into a blonde. Not the best disguise, but they put more effort into it than Superman. He only puts on glasses. As a character, the Serif has always intrigued me, but it was always interesting to see how comic writers would work his religious artifacts into superpowers. Given the limited amount of space they had, the stories were well done. I always felt he deserved more of a spotlight. See you next month. Absolutely, Chris. Yeah, I knew that about the Wonder Twins. They're not wigs. And I think the Wonder Twins stories just make me zone out to the point that I just forget about all that. I just let Chris go on about it. But yeah, that's right. They are not, in fact, wigs. Rob McCarthy says, on a more related note to the actual comic, that backup would have freaked out young Catholic me, not as much as the Ghost Rider, which still had a god, real god power, superhero's powers based on objects. No, that's God is magic, which would be theologically troubling. Yet both Superman and Green Lantern were fine. My family is weird. Thank you, Rob. Nicholas Prom says, Rob, I love your idea covering the free preview inserts into 80s DC books. If you do this, I have to talk to you about the Flash Force 2000 insert. I'm the only person in the world who is a fan of that forgotten toy line. I even collected all the hard-to-find mini comics that came with the toys. I have no idea what that is, Nicholas. I'm sure I saw it at some point, but I have no memory of it. When I was talking about the free previews, I was thinking more about the very early 80s where DC was previewing other titles in books. Like they did the New Teen Titans free insert in DC Comics Presents, also Squadron, in Justice League of America, stuff like that. The stuff that was like an actual, like, hey, here's another title that we're coming out with. But, you know, you could expand it to do those toy inserts too. Regarding anything concerning a minor toy line or a failed toy line or a forgotten toy line, you got to get Chris Franklin in on that. I mean, you just do. He is our master toy talker. As much as I love talking about toys, he's the master at it. So if we ever did a show like that, Chris would have to be involved in some regular capacity because it's just, you just can't do a toy show on this network without him. Little Russell Bourbon says, I remember this issue as soon as you started in on it. Great guest, Dr. Chris. You made me laugh quite a few times. Thanks. Guest writer Barbara Zachas was a huge fan of Robin, which is probably why the Teen Wonder kind of got the bulk of the spotlight in this issue. Good point, Russell. The first story Bob ever sold was once during Robin, and then he was the character's writer for several years in Detective Comics and then in Batman Family. That would be a good topic for a show here on the network. I hate to break this to you, Rob, but I'm afraid you've been looking at the Super Friends series from a parallel universe if you think Ramona drew the remaining covers. In our universe, the remaining covers are all by the great Kurt Schaffenberger. And I had those Super Story Superman books by Ramona and Dave Hunt. I'm happy that Chris and Cindy got themselves copies. I got mine in 83 when a good friend of mine found them in a local bookstore and gave them to me. I then saw them in the children's section of bookstores like Walden Books for several years after that, so they were around. Working backwards. Yeah, I never saw them, Russell. That's amazing that they were in stores. And I went to Walden Books as a kid. I never saw them. Regarding Women Afraid, I read your comment and I was like, what is he talking about? And I went through Mike's Amazing World and you're right. I mean, you already know that, but for some reason, I just sort of glanced at some of the Superfriends covers and they looked like Ramona to me, just at a quick, again, kind of a quick glance, but you're right. She's done. I'm sorry I made that mistake. That's kind of a dumb thing to say. Because then last episode truly was the last of Ramona Fraiden on Super Friends. But yeah, not that Kurt Schadenberger isn't great, but I will miss the Ramona cover. So thank you for pointing that out. Noah Tarnow says, great discussion, Rob. Your dream of compiling a list of rock bands made up by middle-aged comic writers has been realized, sort of. Check out Rocklopedia Fake Bandica at www.fakebands.com, an extensive wiki of made-up rock bands in various media. No, Jack in the Box isn't there, but it's a wiki, so anyone can add to it. Perhaps this is your moment to shine. I definitely hope that's... My life's been leading to this. I definitely own the Story of Superman box set. Looking at all those images brought back long hidden memories. For some reason, I seem to recall it was some kind of mail order only item, but perhaps it was just that my parents ordered it from delivery from some pre World Wide Web source. We're talking late 70s, early 80s, of course. I got to check out Fig Bands, Noah. That sounds awesome. I really got to check that. And yeah, maybe I will add Jack in the Box. Captain Entropy says, one, Ramona could have been a regular Superman artist. She makes the whole cast look great. Agreed. And two, Bob Oxner's art on the Seraph story rocks. It looks like a classy illustrated book. Love the USA shields and the visiting kids t-shirts. Yeah, it's a great detail. Bucky749 says, great episode, great host. Toy Man is different than the version from the Super Friends cartoon, that's for sure. But we did end up in Bizarro World. Teachers are supposed to help their students, not insult them. And gee, what's wrong with you have to trust in your own power, not someone else. Matt Sir Royce says, I suppose Toyman was allowed to have that cannon because it wasn't a concealed weapon, just a theory. I'd have been very confused by the Toyman's look if I'd read this comic back when it came out. The Toyman is dressed as he looked in DC Comics, sure enough. I was more familiar with his jester-style costume that he appeared in as a member of the Legion of Doom in Challenge of the Super Friends. Further evidence that this comic was meant to take place in DC Comics continuity, not the cartoon universe. Can't think of any other DC Universe rock bands off the top of my head, unless P.T. Zarnum and the Trouble Alerts count. They performed the Ballad of Xan and Jaina. Great episode, Rob, and across the pond, Chris, very entertaining with some great observations. Thank you, Matt. Martin Gray says, actually, Matt, the other Toyman did appear in regular DC continuity, debuting in Action Comics number 432 in 1974, total loser. Dr. Han says, great episode. Always great to hear the good doctor. The discussion on feedback is so interesting, especially hearing Chris L. talk about how we are taught now how to give feedback. Allow me to become an old man shaking my fist at the clouds. It is okay to get negative feedback when it is deserved. Xan and Jaina needed to hear that they overlooked a key detail and let the real villain escape. Now, the friends do seem to pile on here, but the lesson is there. Because the next time they might let the real Joker escape and hundreds of people could die. Positive feedback also needs to be given when things are done right. I suppose here the twins deserve both good and bad feedback. They did stop the fakeouts. The Seraph story is wild, especially since it is pure Oxner. My guess is the Old Testament is filled with holy relics that become a sort of holy utility belt, hearing Burt Ward yelled in my head. But at some point you might cross over into, is this blasphemous or is this going to upset people of faith? But for me, the big thing this episode was hearing about the Superman books, me want. Sad there are only a few more episodes of the show left. I have loved it. Thank you, Ange. Tom Perrine says, I love the Seraph character, and I'm glad this podcast has gotten to his backup stories. Not only speaking or writing the proper name of God is a tradition that goes way back to ancient times, so it's consistent with the Seraph's character for him not to do so in prayer. Thank you, Tom. Sean M. Myers from this very network says, welcome to the podcast, Dr. Chris. I recognize you from our appearance on the MASHcast table read, so I knew this would be a good episode, and I was right. Regarding the look of the villain in the Seraph story, I can't help but think Oxner used Leonard Frey as the character of Harold from the original version of The Boys in the Band as a model for him. And Sean helpfully provides a link. I'm eagerly awaiting Rob's new show, the Peerless Previews podcast, a look at DC Comics' free 16-page inserts. Back Issue Magazine, issue number 130, has a 16-page article, how appropriate, about these great stories. There were 14 in all, so that'll make a great follow-up for when this show ends in a few months. Now, with that thought, I'm going to cry. You know, we've talked about this on the Fire and Water Network thread. If I ever start another show, which is doubtful because my plate is pretty full already, I don't think I ever want to go back to a show where I have to do a gallery post. For anyone who does a show here on the network, they'll tell you the gallery posts are incredibly useful, but they're tedious to collect. And I do kind of enjoy my other shows, Fade Out, Pod Dylan, Mashcast, that don't require galleries. So if I ever start a new show, I will almost certainly not do either do a show that just not do a gallery and people have to live with it, or not do a show that requires one, because yeah, they are just, they're kind of rough. So Brian Schufo says, I still can't get my mind around the fact that this toy man and the one from the Challenge of the Super Friends are supposed to be the same person. Didn't the cartoon version appear in something drawn by Alex Ross? I'm thinking it was Kingdom Come, but it had that brief cameo by Marvin, so I could be mistaken. And then Isamu Hideki Yukinori chimes in. He says, they are not the same person. The toy man from Challenge was named Jack Nimble. God, only Isamu would know this. Presumably his middle initial was B in the comics. Nimble was killed by the Winslow Shot toy man featured in this Super Friends story. And it may have been the example Wonder Woman was thinking of when she mentioned that this toy man had killed before. I didn't know any of that stuff. And also, yes, the trickster-esque toy man from the Challenge of Super Friends also appeared in the Justice miniseries by Alex Ross. Brett Young says, great show, Rob and Dr. Lewis. Having the English accent on the show always classes up the joint. True. Always great hearing a new installment of For All Merch Kind from the Fire and Water historian Chris Franklin. Those little books look so cool. Love the cover design. I'm always a sucker for face-off covers. And how wonderful that DC honored the legendary Ramona Freyden on her farewell issue by saddling her with Vince Coletta. Coletta's eraser really outdid itself on backgrounds in this issue. Vince not only mailed it in, he sent it Pony Express. I know you usually go out of my way to dump on Captain and Tennille, but let me give them some credit for a very cool no-look fist bump so Jaina could change into an eagle and catch fake Toy Man. A simple but very well-drawn panel by Ramona. Another Superman-Aquaman team-up. In my headcanon, these two are the stealth mean girls of the Super Friends. The security gig at the concert has got to annoy them. The most powerful man in the galaxy and king of three-fourths of the planet. And here we are dressed as rent-a-cops to keep an eye on three hippie assholes wearing boxes. Jesus, my octopus is a better musician. You know, I should totally bring a tidal wave down upon this old concert. Probably be the first time this week any of these granolas had a bath. Sigh. I wonder if my weed guy's here. Your persona of Aquaman, Brett, is interesting. I love the discussion about middle-aged comic writers coming up with band names. Jack in the Box is right in that wheelhouse. The opening act was probably Hip Cats or the Nifty Sweaters. But I have to say, hands down, the best moment of the issue was the line, Helmet the Lizard with a gun. When your puppet's name sounds like he could be a Nazi war criminal, you're asking for trouble. And then Helmet jumps off the table, pulls his piece, and starts firing on Wonder Woman, only for her to explain to the puppet that if he wasn't a puppet, he'd know better than to shoot at her. Wonder Woman talking shit to a gun-toting puppet. Just a mind-bending scene. I love it. More murder puppets. To which Chris responded, I tried not to be, thanks for the kind words, Brett. I tried not to be too critical of Coletta's backgrounds on the show, but on a lot of pages, there's only about one panel with an actual filled-in background. The rest are just single-color washes. I know it's only a book for the youngest of comic readers, but that feels like a real shame. I would definitely read a book featuring Helmet the Lizard, former Nazi war criminal, as a nemesis. Me too. Martin Gray returns to say, with every new episode, I get a little more melancholy as we approach the end. Chin up, eh? Still a few more to enjoy, including this one. Good to hear Chris on the show. Ramona's cover would be perfect without the serif triangle at the bottom. As it is, it's merely brilliant. I remember this issue, and not just for the serif story. I like the toy man. He adds a bit of color. But what's that reference to him having killed previously? I thought he kept his hands pretty bloodless pre-crisis, never killing until poor Adam Grant was murdered in a fit of grim and gritty. Silver Age Shark is not a Z-list villain. Tut. He was pretty much the first Green Lantern villain I met in this early Silver Age issues, and he was very scary. I mean, a shark who walks like a man. The Serif strip was again a winner, and not just because it has a biblical rather than editor's notes. It's brilliant to have a non-US centric story, see also Jack-O-Lantern, and to see Bob Oxner's occasionally cheesecake style applied to a chap. It's a shame that Serif's look was changed in the final issue of Justice League Quarterly. Do not look. Am I the only person who likes Jack-O-Lantern stories in this book? What is wrong with a bit of Irish whimsy? And his helmet is a turnip. How awesome is that? Again, working backwards, I like the idea of the Jack-O-Lantern stories. And I agree. I like the international, you know, settings. There's just something about these stories. I mean, they just collapse under their own weight of silliness. I don't know. And regarding Serif's new look in Justice League Quarterly, Martin, you told me not to look. I didn't listen, and now I regret it. So that's really my own fault. It's a little bit on you. Tom Perrine returns to say, I love the Jack-O-Lantern stories. I would be fine with the whole Jack-O-Lantern core. Tom, you've gone too far. Paul Ken from our network says, sad to see the end of the Ramona Fraiden era, but wow, the books that Chris found are awesome. I have never seen this before. So awesome find, Chris. Thanks for sharing. Absolutely. Mike Dinah says, another fun episode. I'm just here to ask if Aquaman with green gloves is from Earth 1 and Aquaman with yellow gloves might, not trying to start a fight, be from Earth 2, what Earth is this Aquaman with brown gloves on the cover from? Or did he just come from an afternoon of playing in the sand? Keep up the great work. To which Chris responds, the rarely spotted brown-gloved Aquaman is, in fact, from Earth Top. So that is going to do it for the comments. Thank you so much. That was so much commentary for this issue, and I really appreciate it. That's going to do it for this episode of For All Mankind. Big thanks to fellow Network All-Star Siskoid and Boss for coming by and talking Super Friends with me. I wanted to make sure that they were the only members of the network that I hadn't been on For All Mankind yet. I wanted to make sure we got them in before we wrap up the show. And again, at the end of the year, don't cry, everybody. So, of course, you can find all the back episodes of this show on our website, finewaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. We're always talking Super Friends on Twitter at For All Mankind SF. And then finally, if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is a name checked in the show of your choice. So big thanks to Chuck Dill, Stanford M. Brown, Gordon Tolton, and David S. Gutierrez for their support of the network. We really appreciate it. So thanks for listening to For All Mankind. Join us next episode when we look at Super Friends number 43, Futurio times 10.
An FWTV podcast.